This week, the gold rally continued for the sixth week running as U.S. equities neared all-time record highs. Great to be back with you, your host, Chris Waltzek. Two more big guest interviews. Well, most of my listeners are seasoned investors who have watched these markets for many a moon, so talk of market manipulation tends to raise red flags. It's usually a warning sign of a novice investor who's simply on the wrong side of the trade. But there are cases where price rigging is well documented, such as gold and silver, where investment banks recently paid out over $100 million in fines due to price manipulation. Chris Powell from Gotta.org outlines his case for precious metals market rigging. He's been on a global whirlwind tour where top investors want to hear his thoughts. According to their findings, our officials have carte blanche authority to rig the markets in any way they see fit and by any means necessary. But without price transparency, there's simply no free markets. We also delve into the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS, which evidently rigs the gold market on a regular basis. Then we welcome back Louis Navalier from Navalier & Associates. He investigates a favorite gold mining stock with several ticker symbols, and we also discuss a favorite technology company. He expects technology shares to continue to outperform as new chip technology from Apple pushes the sector higher. But keep one eye firmly on the new corporate tax reform plans. Those must pass in order to keep the bull in control. We could use your support with the Alpha Stocks newsletter. You help keep this radio going, and you have access to our weekly portfolio of our top stock picks. You can sign up with an email message to me, or just sign up through PayPal or credit card right on the webpage. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. We'd like for you to call into our Q&A hotline if you'd like, 641-715-3900, extension number 514049. You can just jot it down on a Post-it pad and plug it right into the phone. Give us a call anytime you like. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. The yellow metal moved higher for the sixth week running, due in part to the continued decline in the U.S. dollar. Gold picked up just 60 cents, closing at $12.89 an ounce. Silver fell, though, 65 cents, ending the week at $17.86 an ounce. The precious metals XAU shares also finished off about 2.56 at $89.40. Black gold fell $3.50 down to $49.60, just under 50. Well, geopolitical tensions continued to direct capital flows into the precious metals market as the new administration discussed plans for military action with North Korea, which puts something of a cloud over the financial markets and their related models. In addition, uncertainty ahead of the first round of France's upcoming presidential election increased safe haven investing. The polls opened this Sunday, and the race is viewed as neck and neck, with support for the anti-European Union candidates versus the right-wing National Front leader Marine Le Pen. Given the recent terror attack in Paris, the French will elect a new president in two rounds of voting, and the outcome could have very serious ramifications on the EU. Meanwhile, the political turbulence was noticeable in the holdings of the Spider Gold Trust, the world's biggest gold-backed exchange-traded fund. Holdings increased about 12 tons on Wednesday. That was the biggest one-day inflow since September. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, despite the swoon in the U.S. greenback, the precious metals rally paused for the most part. Nevertheless, silver found key support at the 200-period moving average in the weekly chart, and the golden cross of the 50 over the 200 suggests a retest of the $21 peak in 2016 is still on the table. Gold bullion is also holding support and building up steam, with a highly bullish inverted head and shoulders pattern from a technical perspective indicating a move to as high as 14 or 1500. Black gold, though, did fall back into the trading range, but is holding support and technically still on the path for a run to 75 per barrel on a range breakout. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange on positive talk by the new administration regarding corporate tax reform. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones Industrials picked up 100 points, ending at 2547. The S&P picked up 20, ending at 2348 for the week, while the NASDAQ Composite picked up 105 points, ending at 5910. Lastly, the Bitcoin ETF was off, though, GBTC, about 6.5 points, ending at 126. The top story sending U.S. shares higher this week stemmed from positive corporate earnings results, as well as from the Treasury Secretary, who noted the administration would soon cut taxes. Shares soared following the tax reform comments from Steven Mnuchin. The financial shares showed some signs of life as well, with Federal Express adding about 1.6%. In addition, the Dallas Fed President, Robert Kaplan, offered guidance on U.S. interest rate policy, reiterating that we may see as many as 3 rate increases in the Fed's overnight lending rate in 2017. Elsewhere, major trading partner Japan continues to show robust economic signs. The Bank of Japan Governor Haruhiko Kuroda said the country will maintain an accommodative monetary policy, viewed as a positive for the financial markets, as more liquidity tends to lead to corporate expansion, increased employment levels, and better economic output. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, the greed to fear index remains in the fearful level despite our big rally this week. That suggests that once again, the herd is on the wrong side of the trade and the smart money is looking for fresh new highs in this amazing bull market. Moreover, the Fed funds futures contracts indicate about even odds for a rate hike versus no rate hike at the upcoming July FOMC event. So I really only see signs of a healthy market. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. Today's special guest, Louis Navalier from Navalier & Associates. Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome back Louis Navalier with Navalier & Associates. He runs 4 leading stock advisory newsletters, as well as the Portfolio Grader service. Welcome back, Louis Navalier.
Good to be here.
Well, just last week, the Fed released its latest meeting minutes, and it looks as though our policymakers are talking hawkish. Nevertheless, when we look at the St. Louis Fed's FRED website, we see that the Fed balance sheet is reaching the highest level in nearly 2 years, which indicates expansionary, dovish actions on their part. What's your take on the Fed's intentions here?
Well, I think, like many Americans, I think the Fed's just watching in amazement what's going on. You know, the folks in D.C. aren't very stressed because of the changes underway. But I think, you know, until Washington functions, I think they want to basically stay out of the way. Don't want to rock the boat. So I'm really not expecting a June rate increase. But I think the big test we're going to have is the deficit ceiling. One of the reasons retail sales declined 2 months in a row is tax refund checks weren't going out as fast as they normally do. The Treasury's playing all kinds of games to postpone the raising the deficit ceiling, but they're going to have to do that here very soon. And believe it or not, you need Democratic votes to raise that ceiling. So the Trump administration's biggest problem is what we call the Freedom Caucus, the folks that defeat him on health care. Those are libertarian-leaning, all funded by the Koch brothers, and they're just not cooperating, despite Mike Pence's outreach to them. When you raise the deficit ceiling, you have to go get Democratic votes, both President Trump and Paul Ryan, and President Trump might have to promise some pork to get the deficit ceiling raised, you know, like bridges and things, so federal spending. So it's going to be very fascinating. To me, that's the big thing we got to watch.
Well, the mining shares sector remains red hot. We've seen several stocks move several 100% in the past year or so. And the Navalier Associates portfolio grader has at least a couple of favorites, including Franco-Nevada, FNV. Give us your take on this company or any other shares in the sector that you're watching closely, please.
My position on gold miners is I prefer to buy physical gold. I think it's less volatile than the gold mining stocks. You know, we've had a lot of rain out west. The water table's been a little higher. That's going to slow down their mining operations just a tad. But obviously gold prices are at a point where that company should be fine. You know, they use the heat leach method to mine out west. The main thing is they just got a higher water table. They had a record winter snowpack out there. But we do like other metal stocks. I mean, we like Teck Resources, which is a nickel. We like SQM. That's a Chilean company which mines a lot of lithium and fertilizer business as well. All the lithium in the hybrid cars. Hybrid cars are growing pretty fast right now, especially the electric cars.
Well, speaking of electric cars, the first company that comes to mind for many folks would be Tesla, ticker TSLA.
Well, I think Tesla is an example of how indexing destroys markets. You know, the tech bubble in 2000 was caused by 54% of the S&P being 7 giant tech stocks. when they added Tesla to the QQQ and other major indices, because they know they have negative cash flow, they're going to have to sell more stocks. So Wall Street's pumping them, but this is a stock that is ridiculous. It should not be worth more than Ford or GM. Even Mr. Musk at this recent meeting said, well, if you like Ford so much, please don't buy it. They lose money on all their cars, okay? They are totally dependent upon their tax credits from the states. They scammed the state of Nevada for $1.8 billion, a very sore subject in Nevada. Everybody thought they'd hire locals, but we have two direct flights from Guadalajara just to staff the plant. I'm not anti the folks from Guadalajara. They're hardworking, but it's just they got $1.8 billion out of the state of Nevada and forgot to hire locals. So there's a lot of tension on that. And then finally, there's no way in hell the Tesla 3 is going to compete with the Chevy Bolt. The smaller the cars get, the less money you make. So Tesla is a fantasy. It's a fascinating company. If I lived in California, I'm sure I'd have one to get an HOV lane. But competition is fast coming. You're going to have electric Audis. You have electric Porsches. You have electric Mercedes, Volkswagens. You already have an electric Honda just recently. And, of course, so you got all the good hybrids from Toyota and stuff. So there's no way this company survives.
Okay, turning to the Navalier portfolio, greater service on the energy sector, another area that shows spectacular gains and tends to have higher than average dividend yields. Three companies pop up here in the top buy list: USA Compression Partnership, US Silica Holdings, and North American Energy Partners, ticker NOA.
My favorite energy stocks are Pioneer Natural Resources, PXD, and Devon Energy, DVN. A lot of those are transportation, especially Permian basin. Oil prices have settled at stabilized at a very high level. It's perfect for the Permian Basin. That's where all the rig counts are up, and we're drilling like crazy to be energy independent.
We've seen some spectacular gains in the technology sector in the past couple of years. One company that stands out recently, Microsoft, which has had stellar earnings announcements and beating some analysts' expectations. Any thoughts on ticker MSFT?
It's a good dividend stock. And we have another good dividend stock would be Qualcomm. Good sales, good earnings, good market penetration, dominance. Very safe dividend. Those are all examples of a dividend place. Utilities had a higher price earnings ratio than tech stocks did. Okay? And so you've seen all these mega cap tech stocks, Apple, Microsoft, Qualcomm, they're all become the dividend place. Okay? Although Apple apparently has a new iPhone coming. They're litigating with Qualcomm, but Qualcomm dominates 4 and 5G chipsets, so they'll be fine. Microsoft has been obviously very dominant in gaming. They still don't have the most dominant operating system. Their Windows Phone is actually okay, doing very well in emerging markets. It's a very good company. It's just you should use the dividend play.
Turning back to the precious metal sector for one moment, do you have any thoughts on the StreetTrax ETF, the world's largest gold exchange-traded fund? Many folks on the show have expressed their concerns about whether or not the ETFs are reliable, whether their business model is really a safe haven, or whether or not it could be just very disappointing for many investors on a forward basis.
I have a real problem with a lot of ETFs. The biggest problem with ETFs is people don't realize they don't trade at net asset value. And we worry about the premiums, discounts, and price anomalies with ETFs. Again, it's not like physical gold or a stock that would trade at its closing price. The ETFs can trade at premiums or discounts. So that's why I'd rather have people own the physical gold. And as far as whether they have the collateral to back that or not, let's hope so. But we worry about that. But apparently a lot of the appreciation goal was people buying the ETFs, and ETFs were forced to go out and buy. I mean, I think the biggest issue with gold is governments. You know, when India cut back on physical gold sales, that hurt gold temporarily, but we've gotten over that.
Okay, there's been talk by legislators lately that there could be a return to the Glass-Steagall Act. There's been concern that the Dodd-Frank Act just is not sufficient to safeguard our financial markets, and folks in particular are primarily concerned over the potential for a repeat of the 2008 Great Recession and financial meltdown. Apparently, there just isn't the separation between investment banks and major money center banks in this country.
Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, it's all about their trading profits and how much money their trading desk is making. A lot of people don't realize a lot of the passive strategies out there, they make a lot of money rebalancing and trading these things. Equally weighted active ETFs are rebalanced every 90 days, and these desks can make a lot of money. You know, Bank of America came out the other day and says, hey, we finally made more money because the Fed started to raise short-term interest rates, so our operating margins improved. The yield curve's flattening a bit. You got to be really, really careful out there. There are financials that act more like banks, like a Wells Fargo and Bank of America, and there's financials that act more like trading desks, like a J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley Goldman. I think the businesses should be separated, but I don't see any legislation happening right now. There's not enough outrage to have legislation, so I don't think Dodd-Frank's going to be defeated to the magnitude that everybody expects, and Glass-Steagall's coming back.
The bull market in U.S. equities, for the most part, remains intact after several years of explosive gains. Nevertheless, we tend to see a sector rotation. Could we see a rotation away from the currently hot sectors of technology and financial institutions into the mining and metal shares and related sectors?
Well, you know, China has pretty good GDP. That's good for all the metals companies and miners. The worldwide GDP is decent right now. So I think they're okay, but it's like anything, you got to have earnings now, okay? The dollar is not quite as strong as it used to be. That helps prices firm up just a bit, too. I think as the earnings materialize, that whole sector takes off again. The best earnings of the first quarter are clearly going to be energy and tech. Tech will probably run hot and heavy through the end of the year, largely because Apple's going to have the new iPhone, and that'll help lead everybody. You know, we have resurging earnings out there, and the main reason the stock market's done well is it's shrinking. It's physically shrinking. Companies sell debt to buy their stock back, and the S&P has over 2% dividend yield. The 10-year treasury is barely 2.2. Dividends are tax advantage versus treasury bond interest. So basically, as people get more and more wealthy, dividend stocks make sense. So this is going to be a very good year. The only thing that's going to derail this thing is the corporate tax reform. We need to have that corporate tax reform passed. We're anticipating it, and I hope they do get it through. If they can't get it through this Congress, they'll never get it through. Let's hope they get that. Otherwise, that could cause a correction, and August is the most vulnerable time.
Well, you've clearly outlined an important mechanism by which U.S. equities have continued to ascend to lofty heights. Nevertheless, with the threat of higher interest rates, that, of course, would lessen the appetite for investors for corporations to issue debt in order to buy back their shares in capital stock. Do you see a slowing, then, of buybacks, and what might that mean for the U.S. equities markets?
Well, I don't see the Fed raising short-term rates in June, no matter what the Fed fund futures say, because of the deficit ceiling, uncertainty, because of the bad payroll number in March, although ADP was fine, because inflation just fizzled based on the CPI and PPI was negative. I just don't see it. And I see this market rates have collapsed. Also, you have the French election. Le Pen's probably going to win the first election in late April. And then, if she wins the runoff election of the final two candidates in May, that will cause the dollar to rally. Now you also have the British election in June to further solidify Brexit. You know, these are all things that cause the Fed to hesitate. They do look at global events. I think it's very simple. I think the Fed leads from behind. I think they follow market rates higher. If market rates are higher in June, then they'll raise. But right now, I see market rates softening.
And as we wind up the discussion today, please give investors a handful of your favorite companies and ticker symbols that you would consider adding to any portfolio.
Well, I have to give you more aggressive stocks at this moment, only because we're in the middle of earnings season here. But I do like NVIDIA very, very much. They make the artificial intelligence chips that are in the self-driving cars. They dominate the video gaming. They dominate all our tablets, our laptop computers, and our phones, energy-efficient chips. That's NVDA. They'll have stunning sales and earnings. Very good buy near term. I like optical switching companies a lot. My two favorite would be AAOI, and another one that's in Sugarland, Texas, and another one would be OZLR. Essentially, they're helping the cloud get faster and faster. They're helping the cable modems, everything get faster and faster. What's driving the quest for speed on the internet is not only all this cloud computing and data centers, which is very healthy. Another thing that's driving it is 4K television. When you get a 4K TV, you have to have streaming. I mean, I know DirecTV has a 4K channel, but by and large, you need streaming. And by the way, you can stream DirecTV now. So you need faster internet for all this stuff to work. So the optical switching has become a big, big deal. Finally, energy is going to be fine. Again, Devon, DVN, Pioneer Natural Resources are very good plays there. So I'm very comfortable with that. And everybody that owns Tesla, sell it.
Yeah, I share your sentiments on NVIDIA. As an actual end user myself, I'm running this interview today on an NVIDIA card. And, of course, for folks who like to use applications for crunching large data sets or, you know, factoring prime numbers, CUDA software can now be run, as well as Mathematica. And related software programs can be run at phenomenal speeds on NVIDIA's graphical processor units, of course, GPU versus CPU. And it's much less energy intensive and much, much faster. And you can buy a card or even a used card for $50 to $150 and have power that was virtually reserved for top universities' mainframe computer rooms in the past. So NVIDIA is on the cutting edge for researchers.
If you go to Navler.com, that's my newsletter site, there are two free databases there, our Portfolio Grader and our Dividend Grader. And you have full access to my database of 1,400 stocks in Dividend Grader and over 4,000 stocks in Stock Grader. We rank stocks on an A, B, C, D, F basis. Obviously, A's are strong buys and F's to sell. I take advantage of our free database out there, key your stocks in, track them. The databases are updated every week automatically. Also, we have paid newsletters that take these databases and data mine them to find the creme de la creme. You know, we exist to empower investors, and it starts with our free databases.
All right, we want to thank you, Louis Nabelier, for your thoughts today.
It's been great talking to you. Take care.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back with us today at GoldSeek.com Radio and our featured guest, Chris Powell, Secretary Treasurer of the Gold Antitrust Committee, GATA.org, working with, of course, Bill Murphy and others, trying to get to the bottom of all of this market rigging and manipulation. Welcome back, Chris Powell.
Oh, thanks.
Chris, you've been invited to several conferences and talks around the world. I mean, you're obviously in demand. Folks are intrigued. You really, the cognoscenti want to know just what's going on with this rigging and manipulation. And there's oftentimes a lot of confusion around the topic, and you've done a great job organizing your thoughts. I thought we'd start today with your extensive research into the Deutsche Bank price rigging case, where they paid $60 million to settle a U.S. suit.
Deutsche Bank has admitted conspiring to rig both the gold and silver markets and is offered to pay, I think, about $98 million to plaintiffs in that suit. New York, I think, more interesting, Deutsche Bank has also agreed to provide evidence against its co-conspirator market traders in gold and silver. It has, you know, implicated, I guess, HSBC and Societe Generale. So there's, you know, there's going to be a lot of follow-up here, unless the U.S. government can stop the case, and indeed the U.S. government is trying to stop the case. It has urged the judge in New York to postpone any further evidence finding until the Justice Department can begin its own investigation of gold and silver market rigging by Deutsche Bank. And this is pretty funny because, of course, for many years, the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission insisted that it was investigating rigging in the silver market and couldn't find anything. So now somebody has found something, has gotten voluminous admissions. The U.S. government has come in to try to stall the case. And I imagine the government is trying to do that because eventually the rigging investigation will incriminate the U.S. government as well.
You know, you did mention, I believe, $38 million in a silver suit.
We don't know for sure, but since the CFTC, which is supposed to regulate the commodity markets, has sat on its hands about gold and silver rigging, no matter how much evidence is produced of it, one has to suspect that the CFTC has determined that the rigging of the gold and silver markets is actually U.S. government policy and that the government is implementing this policy through intermediaries in order to keep its fingerprints off what's going on in the markets. That makes sense to me. I mean, I can't prove that today. I can prove only that Deutsche Bank has confessed and incriminated the other bullion banks. But the U.S. government does claim the power very formally to intervene secretly and rig any market in the world, and it indeed is authorized to rig any market in the world by the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, as amended in the 1970s. You can see this on the Treasury Department's internet site, the page for the Exchange Stabilization Fund. The Treasury Department claims the power to secretly rig any market in the world, and the Congress has given it that power. So I think our suspicion here about what's really going on is pretty valid. I attended in 2001 a hearing in one of our lawsuits against gold and silver market rigging. The case was brought against the Bank for International Settlements and the Treasury Department and the Fed, some other bullion banks. The single hearing on it was held in U.S. District Court in Boston. And an assistant U.S. attorney got up and, in supporting the motion for summary judgment dismissal of the case, said that the government was indeed authorized to rig any market in secret, or market in secret anyway. I mean, this is a matter of public record. Anybody can look this up. The government has the power to intervene secretly in any market and rig it. What we try to do is call attention to this, that there are really no markets anymore. There were only interventions by the government, that we're losing our market economy, we're losing our democracy, our transparency in government. And the struggle that GATA is waging here, I think, is essential to things far bigger than the mining industry and the financial markets. I think it's our struggle is crucial to democracy and limited transparent government.
You do talk about the Bank of International Settlements, referring to it as the central bank of central banks and the oversight, if you will, of our friendly central bankers at Fed and around the world, the BOJ, the Bank of England, and related banks. And what I found interesting here is that they're getting involved in the swap business. You didn't delve into this too deeply yet. I mean, obviously, these gold swaps give them power and their agents to manipulate gold and the, of course, paper derivatives all around the world. And I think that it was implied here the BIS could be using this enormous power or influence to sway the markets when they start to get out of hand, when the people start to realize, wait a minute, there's an imbalance in the precious metals market. I'd better procure some.
The BIS is the gold broker for the major central banks. Our consultant, Robert Lamborn, pays very close attention to their monthly and annual reports, and if you go through the reports of the BIS, you find that they are very active in the gold business. You also find, as Bob did, that for some months until late last year, the BIS had gotten out of the gold swap business and then returned to it in a big way. Well, there's only one explanation for that, and that's central banks needed to allocate gold around the world in certain markets to control the price. This is another matter of public record. The BIS is the gold broker for central banks, and the central banks are trading the gold market. Well, to quote Alexander Gauthier, the director of market operations for the Bank de France, the Bank of France is active in the gold market, quote, nearly on a daily basis, quote, for its own account and for the accounts of other central banks. They're trading in the market for a purpose. Now, either this purpose is just to have fun, to see which central bank can make more money by speculating the market, or else there's another purpose to it, which would be controlling the currency markets, controlling the gold market, to rig those markets in defense of government currencies and government bonds. Unfortunately, financial news media will never put a specific question about this market intervention to any central bank, even though it's public record. This is a prohibited subject, and unfortunately the mining industry itself is not interested in it.
Well, they may feel that it's just an issue beyond their control. I mean, whereas GATA has actually picked up the ball here and made, a rather valiant and courageous effort to expose what's going on. And you discuss several researchers, advocates around the world, who have made attempts at several different locations to try and, let's just say, nail down how much bullion is actually in these central banks. How much of these reserves actually exist, and how much of it is just paper shenanigans?
I'm just going to try to give credit to two researchers, particularly Koos Jansen of Bullion Star and Ronan Manley, who also writes for Bullion Star. They have peppered central banks with questions over the last few years, and usually they get the door slammed in their face. If you put a specific question about gold market activity to central banks, they will not be candid with you. They will not answer the question. I think that's really pretty telling. But I have said for many years that central banks, or governments anyway, treat their gold reserve information as more sensitive than the plans for the construction and deployment of nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons really can't be used except to destroy the world, but central bank gold is used to rig markets and control the world everywhere. It's a much more effective weapon than nuclear weapons.
It's an intriguing parallel, the destructive power of a thermonuclear device and the destructive power of the central bank's ability to print endless money and manipulate these markets. And you also talk about another researcher here who was looking into Mexico's central bank and their reserves, evidently an unallocated account at the Bank of England. This sounds suspicious. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, Guillermo Barber is a financial journalist in Mexico who has also tried to put very specific questions to central banks about gold. He questioned the Mexican central bank about its gold reserves, and of course they put him off, but Barber prompted the National Mexican Audit Office to prod the Bank of Mexico about its gold reserves, and a few weeks ago, the Bank of Mexico did issue a report about its gold reserves that showed that most of Mexico's official gold was being held at the Bank of England, and a fair amount of it was held in what's called an unallocated account, which signifies that, you know, the specific gold is not there, it's just a liability that the gold has been lent or swapped out. So Barba really provoked action in Mexico to expose that the Bank of Mexico is participating in gold loans or gold swaps to help keep the gold price down. I wish there were more like Barba, Jansen, Manley, who would keep pressing the central banks about what they're doing in the gold market, though I'm confident there's so much evidence are in on the gold price suppression scheme, and I suspect it's because the U.S. economist Paul Brodsky and Lee Quaintance were right when they wrote a paper 5 years ago speculating that the central bank scheme right now is to redistribute world gold reserves in favor of the holders of large U.S. dollar foreign exchange surpluses, so that when the dollar is devalued, the country's holding dollars will be hedged by an increase in the price of gold that has been redistributed to them.
Well, you know, you have plenty of company who obviously share your sentiments here. Dirk Bauer, professor of accounting and finance at the University of Western Australia, certainly shares your sentiments. There has been rigging in the gold market.
Two papers on this. I guess his most recent paper was an update of his first paper, but he looked at gold swaps and leases and concluded that these indeed were the mechanisms by which central banks are controlling the gold price. They are, you know, basically injecting phantom paper gold into the market through these swaps and leases, and he concluded that this was the mechanism of gold price suppression and market rigging. So there's a really an academic study that in the last year that supports Gatta's conclusions. You know, I don't think Bauer is going to get a lot of publicity for it either, because, you know, it's a prohibited subject no matter who gets into it. But, you know, there is an academic study from a respected professor in Australia that concludes that Gatta is right. Central banks are rigging the gold market, and they're using gold swaps and leases to do it.
According to your notes here, former Fed head Alan Greenspan told Congress, do not worry, or at least that was, again, the implications of his speech about the gold price, and the central bank has it all under control. We can sleep well at night knowing that our money supply and our markets are free. We don't have to worry about counterparty operations and things of that matter. Again, this just seems to be counter to your thesis.
Greenspan went before Congress in July 1998. He was testifying on legislation to start regulating derivatives. And interestingly, Greenspan was urging Congress not to regulate derivatives. And he had a very telling reference about gold. He said that they didn't have to worry about anybody cornering the gold market because central banks stand ready to lease gold in increasing quantities should the price rise. That is, Greenspan told Congress that they didn't have to worry about gold derivatives because the central banks were using gold derivatives to control the gold market. Nobody else was going to control the gold market but central banks, and the Congress should leave gold derivatives regulation alone because that was a mechanism that central banks themselves were using to corner the gold market. You know, that testimony is still on the Federal Reserve's own internet site. Greenspan admitted that the purpose of gold leasing was not what some central banks and their apologists were saying, to make a little money on a supposedly dead asset. Rather, the purpose of gold leasing, Greenspan told Congress, was to keep the price down. That's intervention. You know, that's market rigging. And Greenspan himself testified to it. But when Gatta tries to call attention to this, we're called conspiracy theorists.
Evidently, it's not just Gatta who doesn't trust their government. Maybe a billion folks in India as well. You make an interesting case here. Indians have refused, most of them, to paperize, you call it, their gold, turning down this opportunity that the government has extended to them to receive paper money in place of their gold. Only 7 tons of the 24 5,000 tons actually were drawn out, if you will.
Yeah, the Indian government has been waging war on gold for decades. Indian people, you know, have a great affinity for gold as wealth and as savings. The Indian government finds this very difficult because it impairs the Indian government's ability to inflate the currency. The Indian people don't really think very much of the rupee. So the Indian government over the last year has proposed various schemes to urge Indians to bring their gold forth to banks and exchange the banks for gold bonds. And those gold bonds are not paying very much in the way of interest. The Reuters reported a few weeks ago that, you know, only 7 tons of gold had been brought forth in India to get into these gold bond programs, and there's 24,000 estimated tons of gold in India. And I just can't help but thinking that India is a developing country. It's poor, but it has great potential. Think of how wealthy India would be instead of a poor country if a fair free market price was allowed for the 24,000 tons of gold that's in private hands and temple possession in India. But instead, the government of India cooperates with the West in suppressing the gold prices as best it can, and then that really keeps the Indian people poor.
Along with the recent decision of the Prime Minister there to eliminate their lowest currency denominations, which hamstrung the nation because, you know, as you probably know, 80-90% of daily transactions occur through cash and not electronically, as we see here in the United States. So I'd like to move on to your notes to the Federal Reserve. And you finally received a formal response, apparently, from the Federal Reserve that the Fed would refuse to disclose most of its information on the swap arrangement, gold swaps.
Yeah, a few years ago, we made requests to the Fed for access to its gold related documents. We were concentrating particularly on gold swaps. We got a letter from a member of the Fed's Board of Governors, Kevin M. Warsh, who was acting as a sort of hearing officer on our request. And Warsh wrote to our lawyer that among the documents that the Fed was refusing to disclose to us were records of gold swap arrangements the Fed has with foreign banks. And these arrangements were information Warsh wrote that was not, you know, typically disclosed to the public. Well, that was an admission back, I guess it was 2009, that the Fed was involved in gold swaps. More recently, a year ago March, a Gatta supporter was in the audience when the president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, Bill Dudley, was speaking at Virginia Military Institute. And at the end of Dudley's address, he took questions. Well, our supporter in the audience, Ware Smith, first asked Dudley a question about Germany's repatriating its gold from the New York Fed. Dudley answered that question in, at some length for a minute or so, talking about the Fed's relationship with the Bundesbank and why the Bundesbank might want its gold repatriated. Then Smith asked Dudley whether the Fed was involved in gold swaps. Dudley was taken aback for a second and said very dismissively that, well, he couldn't comment on individual customer sort of transactions. You know, this is pretty funny because with Ware Smith's first question, Dudley talked at length about an individual customer transaction between the New York Fed and the German Bundesbank about gold repatriation. But when Smith asked the general question of Dudley, is the Fed involved with gold swaps, Dudley wouldn't answer and mischaracterized the question as an individual customer kind of transaction. That was very telling. Smith brought the exchange to my attention very quickly, and I wrote to the New York Fed's publicists and asked, you know, did Dudley respond this way at the Virginia Military Institute? And I'd like to put the question to you on my own behalf. Is the Fed involved with gold swaps? Well, the New York Fed's publicist got back to me very quickly, and he sent me a link to the video of Dudley's address at Virginia Military Institute, which carried at the end the question and answer exchange. But the Fed's publicist refused even to acknowledge my question, is the Fed involved with gold swaps? So I think you can see that this is the key sensitive question that the U.S. government does not want pursued. That is the Federal Reserve involved with gold swaps as part of a bigger scheme of rigging the gold market? This cannot be answered. The question cannot even be acknowledged. You know, if we had financial journalism in the Western world, this would be a very productive line of pursuit.
Well, no, to corroborate that with your comments on the Canadian billionaire Frank Giustra, a confidant you mentioned of several really top folks, and a billionaire, very influential individual, and I believe a gold mining company executive, said the governments are suppressing the gold price. Puts a big question mark there, I think, in all of our minds. If the top folks are familiar with this scheme and with these operations, you know, what does it mean for the rest of us Lilliputians out here?
In terms of the mining industry, I mean, this guy did acknowledge, managed was the word he used. He was speaking at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference back in January. He was being questioned by Marin Katusa, who's a fund manager. And Katusa asked him, why isn't the gold price so much higher with all the turmoil in the world? And Giustra said that, well, he thought that the gold price was being managed by governments and investment banks. The interesting thing to me is that Giustra didn't follow up with any question, and Giustra didn't volunteer an answer as to, well, what are we going to do about this? We're just going to sit here and take it here? You guys are in the mining industry. Are you going to just sit there quietly and let the price of your product be suppressed? Do you not care about any obligation to your investors? You know, unfortunately, that question didn't get pursued. But I was very heartened by Giustra's acknowledgement that he had come to think that the gold market is being rigged by governments. I tried to get Giustra's attention, I don't know, I think it was 8, 9, 10 years ago. A mutual friend introduced me to him by email, but I couldn't get him to look at the documents that I sent him. He had all this stuff available to him many, many years ago, but okay, he's come around, better late than never. The problem is, what is the gold and silver mining industry going to do about this? Anything, or are they just going to sit there and take it for as long as it lasts?
Well, you know, one wonders just what they can do. I mean, if we look at the size, I read an article just last night that pointed out the size of the entire precious metals mining shares. Just one company in the blue chip companies here could buy up the majority of the mining companies, you know, just their cash that they have on hand.
As long as the world is going to let investment banks, bullion banks, governments and central banks issue pieces of paper that say gold and silver on them in place of the metal. If the world is going to accept imaginary gold and silver as equal to real gold and silver, then real gold and silver are worth nothing. You know, why should the whole gold and silver mine industry be, you know, worth anything? Especially if the industry will not stand up for itself against this fabrication of its product.
I think that all investors and our listeners today really owe GATA.org, you know, a debt of gratitude for this coordinated effort that you all have made for, I want to say, over 15 years, maybe approaching 20 years now, to expose this, because we're all beneficiaries. Okay, anyone who has a modicum of investment in this area really should give a hat tip to GATA.org and to everyone there. As we wrap up today, have I missed any topicality that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I would just urge people, if they're interested in this sector, to go to our internet site, GATA.org, and they could enroll for our dispatches in the top right column. The nonprofit 501c3 organization in the United States. We exist on charity. If people want to support us, they can always go to the How to Help page on our internet site, and they can credit card us a donation or send us a check. Can guarantee you, if you send us $5, you'll have sent us you know, $5 more than Newmont Mining has.
You know, we have some very loyal listeners today, so I feel confident that that will happen over time. All right, Chris Powell at GATA.org. Again, hat tip, and we appreciate all you're doing for us.
Oh, thanks for your help.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers. Plus, their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I commented last week in part by asking, where have the discussions about all the important issues gone? What happened to the March 15th budget deadline? And the fact a fierce and vicious budget debate looms in our immediate future, but no one will discuss it now, let alone commit to a plan for solving it ahead of time. Then a friend of mine emailed me an article from Zero Hedge that I was unaware of from earlier this month, entitled 2017 Debt Crisis Looms. Congress will have 4 days to avoid government shutdown. Essentially, Congress will have 4 days after it returns to Washington from Easter break on April 25th to pass a budget, or the government will, quote, shut down. This means April 29th becomes the potential day of reckoning for all things budget-related. Unlike the approval of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, there is no nuclear option to pass a budget with less than 60 votes in the Senate. And there are plenty of issues baked into the cake that will likely prevent any kind of unity to achieve the necessary consensus. In a statement by Democrat Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, he commented, "If Republicans insist on inserting poison pill riders, such as defunding Planned Parenthood, building a border wall, or starting a deportation force, they will be shutting down the government and delivering a severe blow to our economy." A stalemate is built into this negotiating equation from the get-go, and still, almost no one is discussing it. A stalemate that can have severe ramifications and create its new chapter of melodrama from the Washington elite. All this is knowingly happening against a backdrop of rapidly changing economic data. Only 98,000 new jobs were added in March. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecasting model is now projecting that U.S. GDP growth for the first quarter of 2017 will be just 0.6% on an annualized basis. There has been no growth for commercial and industrial lending for the past 6 months. Commercial bankruptcy filings from corporations to sole proprietorships were up 28% in March over February, which is the largest month-to-month move in the data of the American Bankruptcy Institute going back to 2012. On top of that, U.S. credit card debt just exceeded $1 trillion. Retail stores are closing. Pensions are facing significant shortfalls. When stacked up, these individual circumstances potentially set the stage for significant uncertainty. When stacked up against looming threats and promises for actions and reactions for various military situations around the globe that now include the U.S., Russia, and China, and many other smaller players, uncertainty rises to epic proportions. No one wants to be blamed for economic failure. All sides, the Democrats, the House Freedom Caucus, and the President, have all positioned themselves to defend their promises and their constituency. Now, the outside threat of confrontation looms with players outside of our control. This is the perfect storm for just one thing that helps all sides save some kind of face with their voter base. They will eventually agree to print the difference and increase the debt because circumstances, real, contrived, political, and otherwise, will give them all the political cover they are starving for at the moment. And that political cover will come at the cost of a continual downward trajectory in the living standards for the rest of us. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at Conquer Change. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. Bank and founding director. Their Sal George project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Rhea project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.